Welcome to Canada Conversations, part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Delaware Public Media News Director Tom Byrne. This conversation focuses on the race for Delaware's U.S. House seat, and we are joined by the Libertarian candidate for that seat, David Rogers. David, thank you so much for joining us on Canada Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with, why are you running for this U.S. House seat? What prompted you to get into the race?
I guess it originally started back when Trump was elected, and I just thought, like, how can people sit by and do nothing? And it just inspired me to get out. And, you know, I've always been libertarian, but to get more involved in politics and just try and, you know, let people know my opinions and my views and just spread the word more. And I thought that, you know, running for this seat would be a great opportunity to let more people know about libertarianism.
What should voters know about your qualifications for the job? Perhaps something that they may not have been able to glean by looking at your website or just kind of general knowledge about you.
I've been involved in politics for a few years now, and I've learned a lot about, you know, the laws and how Congress works and how it doesn't work and just how things are or how they should be and just what needs to change. And I've learned a lot about that. I've listened to a lot of people who know more about it talk than I do, and I've learned a lot from them. And I just think that, you know, I could bring a new perspective on a lot of things. And, you know, I think that I see a lot of the same issues that other people see, but maybe take a different approach to solving them.
Let's dive into some of these issues. Starting with, you know, how do you feel the federal government, specifically Congress, has done in responding to the COVID-19 pandemic? And if there are still no vaccines or established treatments for the virus by the end of the year and you're elected, you know, what would you want to do in Congress? What would you prioritize as far as the ongoing response to the pandemic?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look, there have been a lot of countries that have shut down their economies, and there have been countries that haven't. And some of them have had lower spreads of the coronavirus, and some of them haven't. And there isn't really a correlation between shutting down the economy and stopping the spread of the virus. So I think that was a bad response on the government's part, shutting down the economy. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think there are things that we can do, you know, to help prevent spread the virus. I think, you know, social distancing is great. I think wearing masks in public is definitely something that can help. And I think there are a lot of things that we can do without overreacting to the virus. And I think the government did have a bit of an overreaction.
Having said that, are there some things that Congress should do or should be acting on to either mitigate the spread or support the economy in you know, staying, you know, kind of staying and people staying afloat as the country works through this pandemic?
Well, I think a big thing to help the economy is just, you know, get out of the way and let people run their businesses. And, you know, maybe you put in some laws saying that, you know, you have to wear a mask if you're going into a public business, but, you know, we don't need to shut all these businesses down and destroy all these people's livelihoods. I don't think that's really helping. And, you know, maybe we have, I know there are some states where, like in Delaware, it is the law that you have to wear a mask when going in public spaces, but that's not the case in every state. And so maybe we you know, work towards that, although I wouldn't want to see anything, you know, permanent put in place, because hopefully this isn't going to last forever.
Let's talk a little bit more about the economy. Obviously, the pandemic and the effort to kind of shut down a large portion of the economy early on has thrown the country into a recession. There's still a very high level of unemployment. What role can Congress play in getting the economy back on track, especially if the pandemic lingers into 2021?
Well, I think the biggest thing, unfortunately, a lot of damage has already been done. And, you know, you can't just wave a magic wand and undo that. Now, I think one thing that Congress does need to do is not add any restrictions to necessarily the economy. We, you know, with COVID, like I said, people might need to learn to modify their individual behavior, but that doesn't mean that we need to shut down businesses. We can have people, again, you know, social distance, wear masks. We can do a lot of things. We can maybe provide some funding for a vaccine, and, you know, maybe that could help speed things along. But
so you don't necessarily see any need to continue on in terms of things we've already seen, things like individual payments to people, small business loans, that the type of things we've already seen in some of the relief packages, extended and larger unemployment benefits. Are any of those things that you would see as things that are either needed to be continued or built upon to try to get the economy back to at least something close to where it was before the pandemic?
That's a difficult thing to get into, because we would have to look at where are we going to get the money to do that? Because if we're going to raise taxes to do that, we might create some jobs, but then we're also hurting job creation. So, you know, where are we going to get the money to do this? Are we just going to print more money? Because if we just print a ton of money, that causes inflation, and then people's money is worth less, and people are hurt by that. So I think it would depend on what's being done. I don't want to just say, you know, oh, we can go out and we can do all this great stuff and promise all this pie in the sky, because, you know, when you do one thing, it can have other negative consequences. So, you know, I wouldn't be like opposed to any one thing in particular, but it would depend on how other people were proposing that we get this done. And, you know, because I wouldn't want to raise taxes again, because, you know, that would have negative impacts on the economy. And again, I know printing money sounds like a great short-term solution, but in the long term, that can have a lot worse effects than any short-term benefit we might get.
Let's move on to healthcare. That was a major issue in the 2018 midterms. There's still uncertainty about the future of the Affordable Care Act. And at the same time, there's a growing push from the progressive side of the Democratic Party for some kind of version of Medicare for all. What do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing healthcare in this country? And if it's not the ACA or Medicare for all, what should it be?
Well, I think that a big problem with Medicare or with healthcare is that the government is so involved in it. And I think that, you know, that causes prices to rise, and that when, you know, you have government regulated economy, or I'm sorry, when you have government regulated healthcare, it doesn't increase the amount of doctors. It doesn't increase the amount of hospitals. It isn't increasing the amount of healthcare that's available. It's just putting the government in charge of the distribution of healthcare and who gets the healthcare. And, you know, I've seen how government manages things and how inefficient it is. And I don't think government run healthcare is a good idea. I don't think, you know, I think the government got involved with the Affordable Care Act, and that caused healthcare costs to go way up. And then, you know, I don't think having, you know, even more government involvement is going to get costs to go down. I mean, government is the people who paid $300 for a toilet seat, you know, for the, I forget if it was the Navy or the Air Force, but one of the branches did that. It's like that's not going to get costs to go down. That's been a common refrain we've heard, that, oh, if we can get the government involved, we can get costs down. And I don't see that happening. I think the solution would be to lift some of the restrictions and maybe to encourage one thing that they had before was you had doctors would establish practices together, and you would have different specialties working, and they would have patients, and they could all get together at the end of the day and talk about what they saw, the problems that they encountered, and they could learn from one another, and they could also provide health care to people. And it was done on, you know, an individual basis, and if costs were too high, people could move on to another one. And if they didn't get good care, people could move on to another one. So it incentivized doctors to keep costs low and to provide good care. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to have doctors incentivized to do that, not have government-run healthcare.
The country has seen protests throughout the spring and summer focused on issues surrounding racial equity. The topics of debate have run the gamut from removal of monuments, renaming sports teams, to police reform and addressing disparities in areas like education, for instance. What do you believe Congress's role is in addressing these issues of racial equity? How should Congress get involved, if it should get involved at all?
Yeah, I think there are a bunch of things Congress can do on this. And I think one of the biggest and most important things is to address the qualified immunity of police. And I don't think they should have it. There's a couple of representatives who are in Congress now who have already opposed ending qualified immunity for police. And I think that's one of the biggest things that needs to happen. I don't know if it will pass, but if I were in Congress, that's definitely something I would support and I would work to see getting passed, because I think as long as police can literally get away with murder, they will. And I mean, that's what qualified immunity does. It says police do not have to respect people's civil rights. If they violate people's civil rights, there's no consequence. And when there's no consequence, they're just going to keep on doing what they do. So I think that's the biggest issue. I think another problem that disproportionately affects minorities is the drug war. It just puts a lot of people who aren't violent and who otherwise wouldn't be criminals in jail. And so I would also work to deschedule a lot of the drugs that have been put as Schedule I drugs with all the heavy penalties, and, you know, locking people away and then destroying their lives for, you know, owning a plant or something. So I would work to, you know, end the drug war. I think that's another thing that can really help. And another thing that I would like to work to see is there are a lot of police departments that use fines as a way of revenue generation, and they use it to bring money in. And because of that, a lot of minorities suffer at the hands of that, and they suffer a lot of police harassment because of that. So I would also work to put, you know, laws in place so that police couldn't use fines as a means of revenue generation, and just, you know, using that as a way to help in the harassment of minorities.
No matter how the 2020 elections turn out, the political atmosphere is likely to remain a contentious one. How would you work with colleagues, if you're elected, from other parties to tackle pressing issues?
Well, I mean, when you get in Congress, you can propose legislation, and, you know, you can either work with people to get things done, or you can work against it if you think they're bad ideas. And I mean, I think you just can't be afraid to, you know, support someone just because they're from a different party. And I mean, I think there have been some bipartisan bills that have been put forth, and I think there could be more. And, you know, as a libertarian, I know there's currently right now only one other libertarian in the House of Representatives. I would work with him, but, you know, I'd be willing to work with Democrats. I'd be willing to work with Republicans, you know, as long as they had good ideas. I'd be more focused on, you know,
is this a good idea? Is this going to help the American people? Then I would be focused on, you know, is this a Republican idea? Is it a Democratic? Is it a Democrat idea? Is it a Libertarian idea? You know, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. And I would work to, you know, see those bills get passed and work against the ones that I thought were taking America in the wrong direction.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle? Obviously, the pandemic and other things have overshadowed a lot of issues. Is there one you feel deserves more attention, and how could you address it if you're elected?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of issues that have taken the back burner recently, you know, like immigration. And I think immigration is something that we need to see increase, that we need to make immigration easier for people to do. But that's kind of something that, you know, again, is already out there. One issue that a lot of people aren't talking about that personally I would like to see end is an end to civil asset forfeiture. And that, again, that's something that originally it started out in the war on drugs, which, as I've already said, I'd like to see that end. But now it's another way that police use to harass minorities and take their money. And I think that's horrible. And, I mean, it affects people of all color. And it's just a way basically police come in and steal their money. And there's nothing you can do about it. It violates it's unconstitutional because you have a right to have a trial before you have any property seized and a right to be found innocent or guilty, and it just bypasses that. So to me, that's a really big issue that I would like to see. I would personally propose legislation that put an end to that on a national level and said, as states, you are not allowed to confiscate anything from anybody unless they've been proven guilty of a crime. And, you know, you have a right to your day in court, and police just can't come in and take your stuff because they suspect you of wrongdoing. I think that's a horrible injustice, and, you know, that's not something that gets a lot of national attention, but that is something that I would like to see change.
David Rogers, Libertarian candidate for Delaware's U.S. House seat, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
You can find all of our candidate conversations online at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org. Candidate conversations are part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. Thanks for listening to Candidate Conversations.